Porch Air. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Back Porch Education Podcast. For the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about all things educational. It's a wonderful day to learn something. Glad you could join us. And welcome back to our podcast. You know that we start off almost every episode with a poem. And this time around, Jason was bold enough or silly enough to tell me the name of the poem that he's going to read for you. And I'm going to tell you the name of it so that you can prepare yourself. This sounds like we should air this on Friday the 13th or something. This poem, Jason, that you've chosen, and I'm sure there's a deep reason for it, is entitled The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner. Seriously?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Oh, man. No, this is a good one. But you're right. This is the last time I tell you the poem before we start. No, The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner. It's a little five-liner by Randall Jarrell. It was written in World War II, 1945, I think, was published. So anyway, it's a World War II poem. It's awesome. But it hits quick, and it's kind of brutal, so hang in there. But here it goes. The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner by Randall Jarrell. From my mother's sleep, I fell into the state, and I hunched in its belly till my wet fur froze. 6 miles from Earth, loosed from its dream of life, I woke to black flak and the nightmare fighters. When I died, they washed me out of the turret with a hose.
Wow.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. But I guess I picked that poem because we're talking today about the modern age, and we're talking about education in the modern world. And I wanted this poem to perhaps serve as a backdrop for our modern times. There's some pretty brutal stuff out there. It's a trying time that we live in.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think that we need to remember that. So I think this is a great poem for those reasons.
Yeah. And so with this episode, we just want to throw out to those who maybe feel like they're in the gun turret, some real mm-hmm. basic principles that we think give any teacher a renewed vision for what they're trying to do. Jason, you start us off. What do you think is a principle that builds on this notion of hope in education?
Good. So here it is, flat out. It is the parent that is primarily responsible for educating the child. That should encourage us as teachers, and that should also encourage us as parents. So if you're a parent and not a teacher, that's still true. If you're a teacher and not a parent, that's still true. So, of course, children are going to learn from all kinds of different people and lots of different teachers throughout their life, whether they're homeschooled or public school, private school, doesn't matter. They're going to learn from a lot of different people. But it's the parents' responsibility to pick those teachers as carefully as they can.
And I just would add quickly that's an unending job.
Mm. Right. You know better than me. My daughter's only 3.
But I'm 53, and my dad still teaches me.
Mm. Oh, wow.
That's where I'm going with this. Yes, my 25 down to 15-year-old four boys in that category at the moment, certainly. I want to be teaching them. But I say this because I think too many people, you know, think – that there's an end to this, that graduation has that notion of finality to it. No.
No, not really.
And why would we want anyone else to be the primary teacher of our children? We love them more than any other human.
That's true.
I don't want to give that up to anybody. And sometimes what I'm nervous about with all of the specialization that people want to foist upon education is that to some extent they're trying to tell me as parent that I'm not capable of teaching my children as well as they can. And I just disagree. I guess that leads to the second principle. If the first one is you're responsible, Second might be relax. It's going to happen.
Right. You can do it. Right. Yeah.
Education is basic, fundamental. Just it is life. Right. It's like air. Yeah. It's there and you breathe it. It cannot be avoided. I think we sometimes worry so much that we have the right education or the right curricula. Or I meet this a lot with homeschoolers, and my family's involved in homeschooling, so I feel this very personally, that we've got to have just the right plan or just the right program or just the right – no, you don't. First of all, the perfect one doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. The perfect curriculum for education is life. Mm-hmm. And you're in it. So good job. You chose wisely. You chose life. But to me, when I say that it's basic to life, that's not to say, well then don't worry, you know, just let your kids sleep all day. The question is not whether it's going to happen or not, but what the quality is going to be, right? Which is probably another way of saying that education is mostly about the ends that we have for it. Why are you seeking to educate your child?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess I've hinted at it. Let me bounce to a third one. How do I want to say this without belittling all of the hard work people put into becoming an educator? I don't think education is as complex or specialized as many people today want you to believe. Certainly, studying it is important, but it's just being humane.
Right.
it's being...
Well, if education is life... Right.
Right. So I just don't want folks to fall for some of the expert snobbery that surrounds us, where they want to overwhelm us with statistics or with data.
Yeah. Data. Exactly.
Now we're back at Auden's poem, right?
Yeah.
We just want to know where to stand and where to sit. And the DMV with books is to be avoided.
Mm. And I would even say this is where Randall Jarrell's poem hits us again. The first line, right? From my mother's sleep, that is from the womb,
right,
I fell into the state. This idea of from the moment I'm born, here I am in the state curriculum, or I've been given over to the experts from the moment I'm born.
And it's until my fur freezes.
Right.
You know, there's a coldness, there's a sterility that sometimes creeps in. Mm-hmm. Education's about taking the time to think and to let it soak in.
Right.
It's formative. It doesn't need to be this high speed quantity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to butcher the Latin, but the Latin term is better than what it translates into, the multa non multum, this notion of much, not many.
Wait a minute. Isn't it multum non multa?
Yes. Okay. So this is all payback for the crack on your poem.
Well, yes. Well, you want the
sit for our listeners' sake. Jason teaches Latin. I do not.
So okay.
It's one of those places where I wish I had had him as a Latin teacher. I didn't have a Latin teacher. So, but I know these phrases because, again, the Latin phrase is there because it's been thought about so long. This notion, it's not that I read 30 books at a skim level. It's much better to read 4 books deeply than 30 books shallowly. And I think at times education gets that flop.
Yeah.
If I can come out and stand next to the stack of books and it's taller than me, here I read all these, I must be educated.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It depends on how you read them, and it depends on whether they seeped into your life or not,
right,
not waved at them as they flew by you. So are we probably ready for a break?
I think so.
Let's come back and keep this going here in just a minute. Hey, during this brief break, I wanted to encourage you to use the share buttons we have on our website in order to help us get folks tuned into the show. Our goal is to encourage as many educators, homeschoolers, NFL punters, and donut makers as we can with these podcasts. So help us get the word out. Share our Facebook page. Send folks a link to one of your favorite episodes. Do whatever you can to help us share this craziness with either your best friends or, if it's more appropriate, your worst enemies. We will love you all the more for sharing our love. Thanks. And Now, back to the show.
Okay, so the next one that I have is teaching the downtime. We have a lot of margins in our life built into the school day. So if you're a teacher, the lunchroom would be a margin that you can teach in. If you are a parent and your child goes to school, you go to work, man, those margins in between when everybody gets home and when everybody goes to bed, those are important times. One of the members of the board of the school that I worked at, he would say all the time, he would tell us, the most important things in education are caught, not taught. And I think that's really helpful. Man, students are picking stuff up. Children pick things up. A child is always learning. And you, as a parent or a teacher, are always teaching, even if and perhaps especially when you don't realize it. So we want to be intentional about what we teach children in the downtime, in the in-between learning phases.
Right? Yeah. And it, so this power of observation, I think, is incredible. My children, they always picked up the very things I was trying to hide from them.
Right.
You know,
yep. I don't want them. Three. So I get that all the time.
Right. Right. Wait, where did you get that word?
Right.
Well, you know, my wife looks at me and says, well, you didn't get it from me.
The older brother.
So, but their powers of observation. I had an instance in a class here a while back where the students were writing an essay test. And so Mr. Elliott was doing what he likes to do, which is sitting and reading a book.
Exactly.
The title of the book was Ordinary.
Oh, boy.
That drove my one student to distraction. They zipped up to me right after the test was over and were like, what is that book about? And I said, just ordinary things. No. Who would name it? And he wouldn't let it die. He brought it to the next class next day. Mr. Elliott, I want to know what's in that book. And so I talked with him. I'm going to spill the beans. You can go look it up. Michael Horton's Ordinary is a wonderful book. But the point is that title of the book,
right?
Which I wasn't trying to shove it in his face or anything. I just was reading a book, and he noticed that. Well, Mr. Elliott doesn't read thoughtlessly. There must be a point. I want to know what the point is, because that's a stupid title. And it made for great formal teaching from a very informal observation that a student made in passing, just because their eyes were wandering around the class.
Right. Well, that's good because, I mean, right there you even see education being not answering a question before it's asked.
Right, right.
That kid was relentless. He was like hounding you. Oh, man, right. You got him right where you want him.
Right, right. And he was annoyed that I had a meeting at lunch because he would have been in my office and right. taken care of it that day. He had to wait right. till the next day. So, and I think that leads right to the next point I wanted to make, which is real education is real life, and yet all too often I'm afraid we turn it into a game.
Okay.
Now, let me explain myself. I don't think education should be a game, but if you live and breathe in the modern American educational setting, it has become such.
Mm.
Most of it is the college entrance game, but there's all kinds of ways in which we game this. And so my suggestion to parents, who are trusting others to educate their children or are educating them themselves in a homeschool setting, is that the best way to deal with any game, right, is to learn the rules.
Right.
Right. And I'm a soccer dad. Three of my four sons have played soccer for a long time. And there's that wonderful rule called offsides.
Oof.
So you either dig in and try and figure out what in the world this is. What's offside? Because the whistle goes and the flag goes up and the man's offsides, and I don't know why.
Right.
So you either learn the rules of the game and put yourself at ease, unless the ref makes a bad call, or you just sit there frustrated. I don't understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just recommend to folks that they learn the rules of the game, so to speak, and put things in their proper perspective.
So are you talking like college entrance here or sort of education in general?
I think I got a whole bunch of things in this pocket.
Okay. All right.
Let's start with grades.
Okay, good.
Okay? So in the soccer analogy, it's really amazing when a guy can dribble all over the field. But that's not the point.
Right.
Put the little ball in the goal.
Right. Score goals.
If you have to dribble to do that, do so. But it would be better just we were impressed with your prowess, but score goals. Grades are not the goal.
Okay, good.
I'm sorry.
I like it.
I'm going to say it again. Grades are not the end. Ooh. They're a form of communication, right? What they should say is, I am or am not learning this subject well. And especially if a parent, you know, homeschooling is this interesting thing. Do I have to run it just like a school? How do you grade your child? You know, and there's various viewpoints on that. We can build a whole episode about assessment at some point, or a whole year about assessment if we want. But
true.
But in the end, what you're doing is the teacher and the student, and if there is a parent involved, in other words, the teacher is someone other than the parent, they're having a talk in which the grade is saying they're doing okay. They got a C in this class. Or, man, this student is deserving of some praise. They have earned an A, and they are excelling at the grasping of this content, this class. And it's a conversation, not a trophy.
Right.
So those of you bold enough to homeschool, be wise, and even as you forge your own path, and we both highly recommend that the main driving force of a good homeschool is the taste of the parents. That's why you're homeschooling.
Absolutely.
So be joyful in that, but don't forget that there's a game to be played out there.
Right.
As you said, college entrance is a big part of that. Transcripts, grade books, interest testing, that sort of thing. And Jason, you've got experience in this. You work a lot with people in this area. How would you add to that encouragement?
Yeah, I would say homeschooling, man, that's fantastic. I think you, as a homeschooling parent, advantage your child a lot and in a lot of ways. So that's a fantastic thing. If you can do that, go for it. If you can't, that's okay. But specifically for those homeschooling parents, just go for it. But yeah, go ahead and jump through the hoop. When you figure out how the game works, it doesn't take that long to just jump through the hoops that are needed. So you're advantaging your child in a lot of ways. Just make sure, tick the boxes so that you're not disadvantaging your child in any way. So like you said, I do ACT, SAT stuff quite a bit, test prep, and it works out great. You know, I teach students really quickly how to do a lot better on this silly test. And the first thing that I tell them is, this is just a silly test. It's just a game. It's not a big deal. Learn how to beat it, and colleges will give you money.
Hmm. Yeah.
And we just go from there, right?
Yep.
You don't have to put a lot of weight on it.
Right.
Just get through it.
I don't think we've thoroughly thought through, and I want to talk about this more after the break, how far ahead somebody who's operating from a place of joy is compared to somebody who's operating from a place of fear.
Okay, good. Yeah, let's pick that up when we get back.
While this show is a back porch discussion, it does cost a little bit of money. So if you're liking what you hear, consider helping us out. You can simply use the donation button on the website to send along a one-time gift, or we have subscriber plans for those who want to commit to regular support. Subscribers can get premium rewards depending on how nice a chair you pull up on the porch. We have everywhere from sitting on the floor to our finest rocking chair available. But whatever you can do, know that it helps us keep the conversation going. And for that, we heartily thank you.
Okay, so now that we're back, let me say on the tail end of that discussion of college preparedness, college is a wonderful place for a whole lot of people. It's a really fantastic idea we thought up, this idea of going to school and getting smarter. But college is not for everybody, and it doesn't need to be for everybody. There are tons of people who, you know, it's better for them if they didn't go to college. It's a waste of time for them to go to college. So if college preparedness then is not going to be the focus of education, it almost gets back to what, Steve, you were talking about earlier. Why are we educating? What are the ends of education?
Yeah.
College is great, but a good primary and secondary education should prepare a student not to be able to enter college, but to be able to enter life.
Right. Adult life. Exactly. So there's such an emphasis on getting them ready for college and being successful in college. And will they have all the AP that they need and so on and so forth, that if education is wisdom and virtue, a good man, a wise young lady, is going to do fine in college. They're going to do fine. There needs to be attention given to a good broad range of subject. But I'm trying to take the edge off the fear that if they don't hit that 4.0 or higher these days, if they don't have that perfect college resume, their life is over. No, frankly, it isn't. And there's a lot of ways to a good life. College isn't the only one. It's a good one, and it's the only way for certain fields of choice. I'm trying to end this thing up with this notion that it's not as scary as some people get caught up in. They believe the hype.
Right. And that kind of leads us right into this idea that I know you're big on, this confusion between sort of what you know and what you are or what you do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I often talk about the fact that the postmodern mind, the current milieu that we walk about in, is it worships science.
Yes.
It's data driven. It's all about knowing things, information. And I'm all for knowing things, but
yeah,
when I start, and I shared this in a previous podcast, when I started considering the permanency of what I was doing, what are my students leaving my class with? Especially as I taught them over a series of years, my initial teaching was in middle school, and I had them for 6th, 7th, and again, 8th grade. And so I, you know, when they walked in my 7th grade class, I knew what I'd taught them in the 6th grade year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was teaching them 2 subjects at the time. I'm teaching a Bible class and a science class. And so if both of those subjects, as I move forward, I found I had to kind of go back because of this 3-month agrarian calendar. While they were all out making sure the harvest came in, they had forgotten quite a bit of the stuff I told them.
Right.
But what was much more poignant to me is that they had remembered how to do this, that, or the other thing. That the habits of a good student were more permanent. And especially as I started realizing it's more than just being able to write a good paper, it's being a good person, and that this wisdom and virtue were the kinds of things that once acquired, it was eternal. You know, that changed the way I approached the classroom. It added patience to me. This is not a sprint. This is a marathon. Endurance is important here. And that there are things that you need to know for sure. You're not educated if you don't know something, but much of education instead should focus on things that you learn to do, the art. And in particular, what cracks me up is, and I'll take teaching as an example of this, teaching is an art. It is something that you have to be able to do. We sometimes just refer to, you know, that person's got it. Or we meet a highly intelligent person who can't seem to teach, well, they just don't have it. We're referring to art, right? We're talking about the difference between somebody who can pick up a brush and imitate the Mona Lisa and me, you know? where I haven't really improved on my drawing ability since kindergarten.
Right.
You know? A funny story in that regard is the first day of kindergarten, they assigned us all just to sit there and draw anything, draw something.
Okay.
And the teacher, who was about 183, Mrs. Rupke, came by and asked me what I was drawing, which is a left-handed insult. I don't have any idea what that is. Little boy. And I said, it's a cow. And she said, cows are not purple. And I said, mine is. At 10 minutes into kindergarten, and I'm sitting in the bad boy's chair for copping an attitude right. with the kindergarten teacher. I'm outside, and to make matters worse, my mother taught in that building. She taught sixth grade in that building. And she could see from her podium in her classroom the bad boy chair in my kindergarten classroom. And I hated that all year. Because she had a full day of school. I'd go home after lunch, right, or for lunch, kindergarten. And I had to wait for my mom to show up. Son, 10 minutes into kindergarten and you're in the bad boy chair. I drew a purple cow. Well, I'll never draw a purple cow again. Oh, well.
So there's a poem in there, right? I'll skip it for now.
Okay. I want to just end by saying hope, keeping hope alive when you're a teacher is, I think, fundamental to thinking the right thoughts, focusing on the right things, keeping with the basics, coming back to the fundamentals and reassuring yourself, especially in homeschooling, because it can be a very lonely and long endeavor. And the wise spouse who is not doing most of the homeschooling, I wouldn't say it's always dads, because sometimes it's the dad that's doing the teaching, but the one who isn't should come home and just remind their spouse of these beautiful things. That you don't have to take our multiple points here, but come back to, why are we doing this? What is the real end? And the fact that that's eternity and that the center of it is Christ should provide enough faith, hope, and love to do a great job. This is where we say goodbye.
Hey, I'd want to end, though, by recommending a book that was once recommended to me by my friend, you. And the book is entitled The Art of Teaching by Gilbert Hyatt.
Mr. Hyatt, yes, sir.
It's a fantastic little book, and I don't know. Check it out, everybody.
His attitude is the one we all want to emulate.
That's right. All right. Well, that does it again. Thanks, guys. We will see you next time.
Well, thanks again for joining us in this great conversation about education. We hope you will not just listen, but participate. Leave us a comment, suggestion, or thought on our website. You just never know when we'll use it on the show. Until next time, pursue joy and learn something.